Yeah.
I think John Marty's health care bill.
What happened on the floor? Today is Thursday, February the 11th, and the Senate Judiciary Committee will come to order. The first bill on the agenda today is Senate File 118. Senator Marty is going to talk to us briefly about the Minnesota Health Act, not the entire act. There are one, two, three, I believe four, in four articles of the bill and various sections of these articles, there are data provisions and judiciary provisions that have brought the bill to us. And so for members who are here, as is the way that we do things in the Judiciary Committee, we as much as we care about this issue, we, for today's purposes, we care to hear from you, Senator Marty, only about the issues that are in the Judiciary Committee. And so we thank you for helping us to stay within those sections. I believe that the other pertinent sections will be reviewed or have already been reviewed in other committees. And Senator Marty, for the data and the judiciary provisions that brought the bill to this committee, I believe that there is an amendment that we ought to put on the bill so that as you go through those provisions, you will just talk about the bill of those provisions. Members, the A2 amendment was drafted by Ms. Pontius in consultation with Senator Marty about the provisions that brought the bill to this committee. And Senator Marty has been working with Ms. Pontius, and he would like us to adopt the A2 amendment because that's where he would like it, the shape that it for it to be in those provisions. Although, Senator Betzel?
Well, yeah, except, Madam Chair, of course, since this is not the committee of jurisdiction or origin, I think we need to have him explain the amendment and go through it first. We can't just treat it as an author's amendment. So,
I understand. So all of the provisions that brought Senate File 118 to the committee actually are, with the exception of one, Ms. Pontius, are on the A2 amendment?
Madam Chair, I think that's correct. Most of them are addressed in the amendment.
So, Senator Marty, why don't we have you walk through all the provisions that are in the jurisdiction of this committee and where the language involves the A2 amendment. Will you just talk to us about the A2 amendment?
Okay, Madam Chair, you don't want any overview of the bill at all, or?
Well, you can give us a brief description of the bill so that we have a context for it, Senator Marty.
This bill, Madam Chair, members of the committee, this bill, Senate File 118, would establish a Minnesota health plan, which would be a single plan, covers every Minnesotan for all their medical needs, and it would be run by an independent health board. And the board would be required to meet 9 legal criteria, which are spelled out in Section 1 of the bill. Namely, it would cover everyone, would cover everything. The patient would have their choice of doctor, provider, and so on. It'd be funded through premiums based on ability to pay, focus on prevention, and so on. And this is a bill that it's a big issue. Healthcare is twice as big of a sector of the economy as state government is, and we have some of the best doctors, best healthcare, best everything else, but the worst system for delivering it in the world. And this would put it in a logical system, and we believe save a significant amount of money in the process while keeping people much healthier, avoiding the need for a lot of medical care by doing it up front, and so on. And I could go into more details on that, and I can start going through the section by section if you want. For those sections, I have Dr. Ed Ellinger from the University of Minnesota here, who is going to speak to the bill, I believe, in general, and I don't know what you want to do, whether you want him to speak, whether you'd rather him not present. I'll leave it up to you how you want to deal with it. I can go directly to those provisions in the amendment if you wish.
Senator Marty, I'd like you to go through the with your brief explanation of the bill as a context for us. I'd like to get to the sections that are in this committee's jurisdiction. Of course, I would like your witness to speak to those provisions if they're pertinent. But, you know, this is not about the policy of the larger health bill, so.
I understand. I've been thought otherwise. I thought we were going to be doing both, but that's okay. I will section, the amendment, I'm going to go through it by the amendment, and I think there is one provision that you were both talking about that that's a judiciary issue that we don't have an amendment on. I think that's the last item on Ms. Pondius's memo, if I'm correct. But the first item on page 3, lines 14 to 17 of the bill, the amendment, line 1.2, it deletes that section. It was a data practices provision trying to say they're supposed to, because this is a totally new entity, a big entity, they're supposed to be sharing data in appropriate ways. And she pointed out we don't need it that way. We take care of it in more specific ways under the Data Practices Act. So we'd just be deleting that. And then in place of that, we would be, when we get to the specific data provisions on page 5 after line 30, we have this new provision that data collected because somebody's applying or enrolled in the plan is private data and may be released to providers for their purposes and for the ombudsman for purposes of their helping serve the patient as an advocate. And then also to the inspector general for its work and basically auditing and inspecting the system. The next provision, which is line 1.12 of the amendment on its, you can see the new language there, data on enrollees are classified under the Data Practices Act, and I couldn't tell you how that classification is because I haven't been on Data Practices Division for a long time. But that is simply provision for data on enrollees. The next two lines of the amendment, 1.17 and 8, simply we had a provision in the bill at the bottom of page 5, top of page 6, a provider may not refuse to care for a patient on the basis that their age, gender, national origin, and so on, which is, Ms. Pani has pointed out, already covered because these would be places of public accommodations. They would be covered under the Human Rights Act. The next provision, lines 19 and 20 of the amendment on page 21, was for the ombudsman. We have a different way of, the ombudsman would have different ways of getting access to the data. This was a crude way we had put together without help from Ms. Pontius earlier. The language on page 22, line 7, line 21 of the amendment, was to clarify that the language on page 22, line 16 of the bill, page 22, line 7 of the bill, that if a provider assists in a complaint against in with the ombudsman, they can do so without fear of retribution. She was asking what we were trying to get at. We didn't want them to be retaliated by their employer for doing so, and this is our way of covering that. And then the next little provision, the amendment, line 16, about how you would appeal decisions, because the ombudsman's orders of corrective action would be binding on the Minnesota Health Plan, and this is how, specifying how it would be subject to review in district court. And then the final provision in here, data on enrollees are private data. If they're, in other words, if you're complaining to the ombudsman, it would be handled that way. So that's the data provisions of the bill. The final one is Article 6, Section 9, she points out, is judiciary issue, and we would be creating an inspector general in the office of the Attorney General for the Minnesota Health Plan. And again, the importance of a separate inspector general for this is key because this is such a big entity, because this is the system that would be governing our entire healthcare system. So that's the way we created it, and I'd be happy to stand for questions on any of that.
Senator Betzel.
Madam Chair. Senator Marty, I'd like to hone in on that last part, the inspector general. I don't know if the Attorney General's office does anything quite comparable to that. And, you know, my experience with inspectors general has been in a different context through the military. But I'd have a concern if we need to have an inspector general that it be within the office of the Attorney General. The Attorney General, of course, constitutionally has the responsibility to, prosecute violations of the law, but if you have somebody working under the Attorney General who has some broad authorities to do investigations and even to compel, you know, some of the things that they may very, very well say, well, I cooperated with the Attorney General, and now you're violating my rights by trying to prosecute me for cooperating. It just sort of seems to me that if you're going to have an Inspector General, maybe it should be somewhere else in the Department of Human Services or some other place, so that you're not having a built-in conflict, which I think could arise if you have that within the AG's office.
Any thoughts, Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, Senator Betzel, I know what the Inspector General's role would be. I know what the Attorney General's role is in general. I'm not sure. In other words, your concern is that if the Attorney General was representing the Minnesota Health Plan.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't know if the Attorney General's office does anything comparable to what's being prescribed here. And I'm not quite sure what the role of the Attorney General is to be in not only enforcing the laws, but also to do the inspecting and so forth. And I think that if there's a health plan that is out of compliance or involved in misconduct or so forth, at some point, you know, somebody has to do the inspecting and somebody has to do the prosecuting. And I don't know if the Attorney General's office quite does both. I think they have people in their office that do check into things, but normally, you know, I think there's a separation of functions here, and I think that assigning this to the Attorney General's office, I don't know. Has the Attorney General's office said that they like this idea, that they can go along with it? I don't know. It's been out here for quite a while, so they must have had a chance to at least think about that.
Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, Senator Betzel, I'm not locked into having it in the Attorney General's office. We had put it there because the health plan is somewhat distinct from the rest of state government. It would not be part of a state agency. It would be a totally separate entity, autonomous from state government in many ways. Maybe it is appropriate to have it in, I don't know where you put it, health department. It seemed at the time we were designing this to be an appropriate place. But.
Yeah. Well, if nothing else, Madam Chair, I'd like to know what the Attorney General's office position is on this one way or the other. I mean, if they're fine with it, okay, I guess. But I'm raising some questions, and apparently, you know, if they haven't weighed in on it, and this bill's been around for about a year now, you know, I'd like to know the answer to that before I can go ahead with this one.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I'm certainly open to rethinking where it would be more appropriate to put it there. I had not seen it as a potential conflict, but I understand your concern that there could be one there, and we're trying to set up a system that's not going to have built-in conflicts. I have not explicitly raised this issue with the Attorney General's office. They may be aware of it, but they have not come to me to raise it, but I don't expect that they're hunting through bills to figure out if this is something they want to do or not. I would be glad to raise it with the Attorney General and get back to you on that, because I'm certainly open to moving it to some other entity if you think that's more appropriate. The point is we need somehow an independent Inspector General who is outside of the reach of the plan, because I think you want to have them totally independent from the plan. But since the plan is independent from Health Department or whomever, I'm open to it, and I'm open to suggestions. So maybe leave it in, and we talk with the Attorney General, and if
Senator Betzel, Madam Chair, I'm not quite sure about if we leave it in, the bill leaves the committee, and it's not working, then we didn't do our work in this committee.
Right. It does go to state and local next, which is
I did talk about that. Okay,
Mr. Peterson.
My name is Ken Peterson. I work for I'm a lobbyist for the Minnesota Universal Healthcare Coalition. Madam Chair, I did speak with the Attorney General's office about this provision several weeks ago. At that time, they said they had not fully explored all the ramifications of it, but they had no objection at that time. After they had the caveat, they had not spent a lot of time looking at it. They had no objections at that time.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Betzel. I'm just thinking, and I wish I could think of a couple of examples off the top of my head. I can't, but I know that there are other areas where there's, you know, where the Attorney General has to overcome and address things where there's potential conflicts of interest, you know, and that they wear different hats between the civil side and the criminal side. So I don't think that that, you know, internally within, I don't know if they put up walls or barriers or how they deal with that, but I knew that they have different departments within that office that, that have to function fairly independently.
Senator Parasol?
My question to Senator Marty or anybody who can answer it, maybe one of our staff can answer it, would this particular function be covered by the legislative auditor? I mean, would it be appropriate there?
Senator Marty?
Quite broad. Their Senator conditions Senator seem to be quite broad already.
It could certainly be something it could certainly be something that would be handled by the legislative auditor. It would be a big function. I mean, we're seeing it not as just this is something, it's such a big entity, you would want to have an inspector general working on it all the time. And if it was placed under the legislative auditor's jurisdiction, I suppose that would work. I was going to comment on Senator Olson's point. Yeah, we were just, my committee just a couple of weeks ago had a hearing on a dairy up in XL Township in Senator Stump's district that has violated air quality standards to the point that the health department wanted to shut them down. They urged neighbors to evacuate. The air quality was so bad. They urged people to just move out of their homes for now,
yeah,
and they couldn't shut them down. Anyway, it was interesting because the Attorney General's office the Attorney General's office in general was very actively trying to help shut down the entity, and the other Attorney General's office was also representing the Pollution Control Agency, which had just re-permitted it, and there were conflicts there, and they worked them out somehow. But I agree with Senator Betzel, we'd rather have a place where there's not likely to be those conflicts.
Senator Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Marty. Senator Scheid and I have discussed, without reaching any conclusions or decisions, but have discussed the idea of just an overall consumer protection function in some kind of a standalone fashion. Because of the same kinds of conflicts of interest that sometimes arise, say, for example, in commerce. If that were to happen in one form or another, that would probably be a perfect fit for your bill. And so I just thought I would raise that as another potential avenue or something we could be continuing to discuss. But from my perspective, at least, it wouldn't be a reason not to move the bill forward because I think it could be done in the one you know, the one way if the Attorney General's office isn't objecting, but we could still be looking for ways to potentially make this better.
Madam Chair, I'd certainly
Senator Marty.
Answer that because the point is, I mean, this is a big thing and we got to make sure it's done right. I think the point is you want to have a totally independent inspector general who has the authority they need to audit, to investigate, to find fraud, to find everything else, and so it's a major, major function. And whether it's done, I think you're right, if you had a consumer office, it might be. It would be far and away the biggest function that office would do, but this could be the biggest function in the Attorney General's office or the legislative audit or wherever we choose to put it.
Right, it will be big.
Yeah. Senator Betzel, do you have any thoughts on how
I don't know how to fix it, Madam Chair. I mean, I'm a little concerned to hear that the Attorney General's office looked at it a few weeks ago. They didn't raise any objections, but they haven't taken a position on it. I think that if the bill goes forward and they take a position on it, Senator Marty, you better be prepared to, you know, come up with a different proposal if they don't like it. But it means bypassing any work that any input from this committee to do it. So I don't know how to fix it because, as I say, I just don't know what the Attorney General's position is. And I think that would influence, you know, what I would want to do. So,
Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, this bill, the next stop would be state and local government, which I think you and I both sit on. And that actually would be a state government organization type of function where you would put some function like this. I would be happy to meet with and have more thorough, get some formal written response from the Attorney General on it before that time, because I think that would be important. I think it could fit very nicely in the Attorney General's office. That's why we had picked that. But I'm not locked into that by any means, so I'll be glad to do that before the State and Local Government Committee.
Well, you know, the concern we have is that there's a potential sense of there's a potential conflict here, and this committee, we don't usually send things out of on a contingent that it would get fixed or might get fixed in another committee, and so I guess I'm looking for some, you know, direction from committee members. I'm kind of where Senator Betzel is at, but I know that this bill has been through a number of committees, and I certainly don't wish for this one provision to stop you all from moving forward, although this is quite a substantial task to put before the Attorney General's office, and I'm interested in some resolution to that question. Mr. Peterson?
Madam Chair, as you know, I was once a Deputy Attorney General in charge of governmental operations. There are a number of conflicts that occur at the Attorney General's office. With those, you have walls. Like at one time, we had different deputies would oversee the representation for the Public Utilities Commission, the representation for the Residential Utilities Division, and the representatives for the Department of Commerce. Each one had different objectives. And so basically, you would not have any contact between the attorneys, between the individuals working on those cases, other than in the adversarial arena. That seemed to work out pretty well. I can also say that in terms of prosecutions, the prosecutions the Attorney General does are mostly in terms of serious crimes such as murder and manslaughter, as opposed to the type of white-collar crimes we might have in this case.
But, Senator Betzel. Madam Chair, if an inspector general operates in the sense that I've always understood it, the inspector general can bypass a lot of levels of bureaucracy and go right to the top and say, we've got a problem here, and here it is, which means the inspector general could go right to the AG's office and say, you know, you got to know about this. Now, if that person has that kind of authority, then I don't know how many firewalls you've got, because the person in charge ultimately is the person who's overseeing everything. That's my understanding of an inspector general. So, and I don't know that there's anybody in the AG's office right now that would have that kind of power or authority in the classic sense of an inspector general. That's why I'm raising questions about this concept within the AG's office. So you know, the way they've done things may have worked, but I don't know that this particular one is consistent with those other concepts.
Well, Senator Betzel, for purpose of discussion in this committee, how about the idea that whether this proposal is within the confines of what they currently do, but do we as a body in this committee, are we comfortable creating this new position or this new authority and granting this to the Attorney General's office? I think that's a question for us to think about.
And Madam Chair, again, from what I know about the bill, I don't know that is that critical for it. I think that there's, you know, a lot of other things within the bill that, you know, creating a different system of providing health insurance, I think that's just kind of one of the things that they would like to see and have in order to make it work. But, if it were to drop out of the bill, I don't think it kills the bill.
Senator Marty?
My view.
Madam Chair, there are several things we could do, one of which would be to take out the provision. But I think it's important to make sure it's done right to have it there. Perhaps part of it is finding out what the Attorney General thinks, I think. I mean, and I'd be glad if you want to set the bill aside and have a hearing sometime very soon on it. We check with the Attorney General's office, get their opinion on it, and so on. That may not change what the committee, that may influence what the committee wants to do, but if they say, yeah, we can handle this, you still have to decide if you feel that's the appropriate place or not.
Right, I'm less concerned about whether the Attorney General wants to consent to or agrees to take on this task. We've had this bill on the agenda. They understood that we were going to be having the hearing today, and part of the pieces that we're going to talk about was what this provision with respect to them. So I'm less concerned whether or not they're at the table saying we agree to do this or not. I'm more concerned hearing from committee members about how comfortable we are in creating this new authority. I think that if they were concerned and didn't want this to happen to them, maybe they would have shown up today to say, don't do this to us. So since they're not here, I guess we get to play the grown-ups and we make the decision. And if, as a committee, we decide that this is an appropriate authority to create and give to the Attorney General's office, then I think we pass it on. And if they've got concerns, they can speak up. So... Senator Betzel?
I'm not comfortable with it, Madam Chair. You know, maybe, you know, as I say, if a case can be made later on, that's fine. I just have some qualms about it.
Senator Higgins?
Madam Chair, we could request it back to this committee if changes are made.
We always could.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure Senator Marty would accommodate. The concern here, you know, and this will be the last time I'll say it, is that it's about the substance of this new authority that we're creating, which Senator Betzel, you know, it has focused in on. We should just, I mean, as committee, we should try to see, Senator Betzel says he's uncomfortable with the creation of this new position, potentially for the conflict piece of it. That's outside of whether or not the Attorney General's office consents to this or not.
Yeah.
I mean, right. And so I understand exactly what Senator Betzel is saying, and you know, I'm also hearing Mr. Peterson saying that in the Attorney General's office, they do have the ability to kind of firewall the different functions, but is that good enough for us? I guess, you know, on this committee.
Madam Chair.
Senator Scheid.
Madam Chair, and maybe the question is for Senator Marty, has this been part of the bill all along? I thought it had.
Yeah.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senator Scheid, yes. And I would, I mean, I think it's essentially you have this independent auditing function, whether it's in the Attorney General's office where we thought made most sense, or health department, or legislative auditor, whom my preference would be the committee chooses one of those entities and keeps the function in it. Obviously, the bill could go forward without it, but I think it makes sense to have it. I think in order to assure, I mean, we're talking big dollars in this sort of thing, and I think the making sure we have the careful process for reviewing, auditing, and so on. So whichever way you decide to do it, I would, instead of taking out the provision, I'd much encourage you to figure out where the appropriate place for it would be.
Senator Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, Senator Marty, I'm just wondering if it would be helpful to have a little bit more detail about how that ombudsman function would be, or inspector general function would be performed. I mean, just kind of what it envisions it doing. So in terms of the kinds of people who would be performing that type of thing, would they be people typically located in the AG's office, or would they be more likely to be found in the auditor's office in terms of being compatible with the kinds of functions that office would typically do?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Peterson.
Senator Olson. When I was with the Attorney General's office, and I still believe it's the case today, they do have a Medicare investigative unit, does a lot of the same sort of thing that this would envision. It would have accountants, lawyers, and other types of people that scrutinize bills, scrutinize exchanges of money, many of the type of functions that an inspector general would do. At least that's my understanding of what an inspector general does. So they've had some experience with it, although I can't say it would be as great as this would be, or as large of responsibility.
Members, Senator Marty has walked through the other provisions that brought the bill to the committee, and those provisions and the changes he would like to see are in the A2 amendment. Does anybody else have questions for Senator Marty on the other provisions of the bill? Senator Betzel.
Madam Chair, I do have a question on the A2 amendment. On page 1, line 23, we're referring to a provider who joins with an assistant in complaint submitting a grievance to subject protections and remedies under 81.931 to 935. Perhaps Senate Counsel can remind us what that is.
Ms. Pontius?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Betzel, that's the whistleblower law.
Okay.
So. Senator Higgins?
Madam Chair, I have a couple of questions. One is on, or two are on page 10, which is actually not part of the judiciary issues, but I think we can resolve them fairly quickly. Page 10, line 3, we have a reference to something a month ago. So perhaps we should put 6 months after passage or something like that rather than a hard date as we're going forward. And then on line 34 of the same page in the header thingy, we've got no cost sharing when I think it's supposed to be no cost sharing. So could we please move the hyphen over to the next, instead of in front of the word cost, behind the word cost. Then on the subrogation section on the next page, I guess, Senator Marty, I don't understand.
Senator Higgins?
Yeah.
Let's address those two technical issues first. Will you move?
Madam Chair, on line 10.34, I move to delete the hyphen in the, is that thing really called a header? What's it really called?
Headnote.
In the headnote, I move to delete the hyphen and insert a hyphen after the word cost. Someone has to do this thing. Okay. Sorry.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails.
And then, Madam Chair, on line 3.
Probably 2011 since it's.
Change 2010 to 2011.
Yeah. Senator Marty, is that the appropriate reference?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
All right, any further discussions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails. We are the Senate Judiciary and Punctuation and Dates Correction Committee.
Yes, we are.
Sure, I'm embarrassed about it. No cost sharing.
No cost sharing. Actually, you could have a whole bill for doing that.
That's a new one we've got to use in a lot of other bills.
Now I have a question
now, Senator
on the
Higgins, subrogation
yes,
section.
Yes, sure, but no cost.
And Madam Chair, I'm wondering why we say that you can go collect the health plan can go collect money from these other entities, like pension plans, workers' comp, health insurance policies, those kinds of things. When I thought the point of having universal coverage was to not have those other kinds of entities and to have one type of payment and process. So I'm just curious about why we have a reference to workers' comp, and if there's anything that ever ought to be in a universal coverage plan, it ought to be workers' comp, and the car insurance, homeowners insurance, all those kinds of things. They ought to all be in together. And so I guess I don't understand the subrogation piece.
Sure. Madam Chair,
Marty?
Senator Higgins, good point. They are included in. In other words, if I'm a Minnesota worker, the health aspects of it, which I think would help a lot with simplifying our workers' comp system and our auto system. And I know, Senator Wilkes, you mentioned how a lot of people you've worked with in your job as an attorney have come to you because they were cut off of health care under one of those policies. They would be covered here, but if you are involved in an accident with somebody from another state and so on, in effect, the workers' comp premiums here might be less, but if you are somehow, or the auto, let's say the auto policy, if you're a Minnesota driver, you'd presumably be paying less because your health care portion would be covered by the Minnesota health plan. But if you're involved in an accident with somebody else in another state and they are liable for your medical costs and they're paying insurance that covers it that way, we want to collect from them.
Got it.
So in other words, it's the basic coverage of health care is it's not going to be through employer plans, through workers' comp, through other things. It would be covered through the Minnesota health plan, but you still need workers' comp for lost wages, for pain and suffering, for anything else. But.
Okay. All right. And then, Madam Chair.
Senator Higgins.
Senator Marty, could you talk a little bit about the personal injury judgments?
What's page?
Line 15 on 11. So if somebody gets a judgment for a personal injury and presumably part of that was health-related, then the plan, the health plan would would try to get funds from the injured person's personal injury judgment?
Madam Chair, yes, I think that's a fair statement of what we're trying to accomplish. The goal is to have the health plan collect from anybody who is somehow or another collecting money for taking care of your health. We want to collect that money if they're still, in other words, it's their obligation to cover you. But bottom line, that's not the way we're providing health care. The health plan is covering you, but if I win a judgment because my employer did something really atrocious and we had some medical expenses related to it, then we want to try and collect that share of it from me or the employer, whoever's got the liability for it.
Thank you.
Senator Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Higgins. Just to kind of expand on that point a little bit farther, and perhaps someone will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the intent here is that when you get a judgment when you've been injured, and let's say that you've got catastrophic bills, part of that judgment is going to go for the payment of medical bills, and part of it might go for other things like your wage losses and, you know, other damages that you have. And under normal state law, if that happens and there's only a limited amount of insurance available, then you're not going to, the person themselves who's been victimized is going to get made whole before, say, another insurance company would, or in this case, the health plan. But if there is money that makes them whole for those other damages and then there's enough insurance or another other coverage left over, it would go to repay these health care costs so that someone isn't getting a double recovery, essentially. And I think that this health plan would follow those same rules in terms of taking care of consumers and making sure that their needs were met first before there was a recovery back to the health plan.
That was represented medical expenses.
So, Senator Marty, this section would represent only the portion of the damages that relates to the health care costs, right?
Right. I mean, if Madam Chair, if I collect a $2 million award because I'm going to need $2 million worth of medical care in my life and another million for lost wages or pain and suffering or whatever, it seems to me that, yeah, the only intent is to collect the medical portion of it. But.
Any other questions for Senator Marty? Senator Betzel?
I think I've gone through the A2 amendment. I don't know if it's been described to us, but I've looked over it. Do we need any further action on
Senator Marty would like us to act on the A2 amendment?
Have we had the whole thing described to us sufficiently? So, if not, I'll move the A2 amendment.
All right. Senator Betzel moves the A2 amendment. Any further discussions on the A2 amendment? All those in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Betzel.
Another slight technical issue on page 23 at section 10 on the examination by the legislative auditor. It says the books and all operating policies. Well, I think books might refer to something that used to be done. I think records would be a more appropriate term. If somebody shows up and says, I want to see your books, they say, well, here they are, but you're not going to see our spreadsheets which are on our computer. Also, and I guess I'd have to ask Ms. Pontius about this, on line 20, page 23, line 5, it says, shall be subject to the examination by the legislative auditor. So if somebody from the office of the legislative auditor shows up, they say, well, you're not Mr. Noble, so I'm not going to show it to you. So should it be the office of the legislative auditor, or is legislative auditor sufficient? I don't know that.
Ms. Pontius?
Madam Chair, members, I think either one works.
Well, okay.
Office of the legislative auditor, that would be.
I will so move on page 29.4, strike books and insert the word records. And on line 23.5, after the word the, insert office of the.
Senator Marty, any objections?
No, nope. Madam Chair.
Any further discussions?
Somebody might come in the next committee might wonder if records are those old things you used to play on a turntable.
Yeah, final.
Any discussions?
Yeah. I don't have one anymore, Madam Chair.
Seeing that there's been a robust discussion on this amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair.
Senator Lemmer.
Isn't the Office of the Legislative Auditor, don't they have the right to look at any function of state government and examine any records anyway? Why would this be necessary to be written into law?
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, we wanted to make sure it was clear that way. Maybe it's unnecessary language.
Madam Chair.
Senator Foley.
Madam Chair, I think the legislative auditor is really a subordinate agency in the for the legislature, and I just don't see any additional language for that. I think the Office of the Legislative Auditor is more appropriate for this overall thing. But even there, they're, unless it's a body of the legislature, why you have probably something that they're not going to take on their own. Mm-hmm. We have a committee that does that and it's all processed.
Then everybody
else.
Senator Limmer?
Madam Chair, if that were the case, then we'd have to write this provision of examination by legislative auditor into almost everything that we put in our statute. I don't think that's necessary, but it's a small point. I'm just bringing it up as a rhetorical discussion of why we even need it.
Madam Chair, I think
Senator Marty
may be right. I mean, I don't recall seeing this in other legislation, so I'm happy if you want to remove the Senator Betzel's.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I agree with Senator Limmer. The legislative auditor is set up, and they, by law, they do regularly audit all state agencies. And in addition, then they have specific projects they do. But if we're creating a state agency like the Minnesota Health Board, they're going to get audited, whether we say so or not. So.
Senator Limmer?
Madam Chair, I move on page 23 to delete lines 3 through 5.
Section 10.
Or Section 10.
Yeah. Any further discussion? Senator Marty? Any further discussions, members? On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, I have a question.
Senator Limmer?
Senator Marty, if I could bring you to page 21 regarding lines 31 through the end of the page, grievance system. It says that the ombudsman shall establish a system for all complaints. The system shall provide reasonable procedures that shall ensure adequate consideration of grievances. Do you have a definition of what reasonable procedures might be?
Senator Marty? Should we have is that a section? Senator Limmer, ask you a question again, because I think Ms. Pani has tried to address a little bit of that in the amendment. That's not in the amendment, Senator Limmer. So, Senator Marty, you have any thoughts?
Madam Chair, I guess reasonable procedures is that there's some sort of due process. I mean, it's kind of reasonable. I know it when I see it, maybe. Somebody described that in the
Supreme Court once.
That was pornography, Senator Murphy.
You have to have a... You want to make sure that the procedures are able to make it so if I have a complaint about the healthcare system, that I have a chance to be heard and that the process takes care of it. The point was, I mean, shall provide procedures. I don't know if we need the word reasonable in there. I think the trust is that the ombudsman would establish reasonable ones, and I don't.
Yeah. Well, Madam Chair, I don't know.
Senator Limmer?
If we have other grievance systems in the state, I'm not sure if we delegate that to that particular organization, or if we as a legislature write it, I don't know. And I'm sometimes the benefit of legislative discussion in committees sometimes can find, can create more finely a proper system to handle grievances and make sure it's fair for all parties. I'm not sure, and I don't want to get too high-minded, that we can do all things better than, let's say, an ombudsman for patient advocacy, but I'm, for lack of clarity, I'm not sure what we're really getting here.
Senator Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Limmer. And I wasn't here when the Ombudsman for Mental Health was created, but I'm guessing that when it comes to administrative procedures, it was probably done similarly to a lot of the rulemaking authority that we give to agencies for how to set up their administrative procedures. And if there's something that, as a legislature, once those procedures have been set up that we don't like or that seems inadequate or the public complains about, then we can come back and, you know, get more involved in those kinds of details as a legislature. But I think it would be really hard as a legislature to dig down into those details on something this broad just in the initial legislation, and that it would probably be better to see what kind of a system the ombudsman would put together, and then if we don't like it, we can do something about it.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator, I see that on page 22, line 16, there's a reference that if a decision of the ombudsman is in dispute, that can be appealed to a district court. However, that can trigger a lot of expense. It can also, and is it really the decision by the ombudsman in question, or is it the system of grievance procedures, reasonable procedures, that might be the problem?
I understand. Senator Limmer, Senator Marty, I think Senator Limmer raises a good point here, is that we would like a dispute with respect to the procedure, perhaps, to be reviewed by the district court under a reasonable person standard. And if that's the case, we don't usually – do you really need the word reasonable in front of the procedures that you would like them to establish if you're already providing an avenue for them to be reviewed, and it's most likely going to be reviewed under that standard?
Madam Chair, I have no, I think I mentioned earlier, I don't feel a pressing need to have the word reasonable there. I want the procedures to be reasonable, but we don't have to tell them that. The question, the review by in district court would not likely be about the procedures. They would, I think what's the decision would be that the ombudsman is charging that the health plan failed to do something, because they're representing the patient, that the health plan failed to do something, and they're ordering a correction in how the health plan functions. And that's what's appealable. So I'm not sure it's the same thing, but I don't disagree with you or Senator Limmer that the word reasonable doesn't have to be there. I think the assumption is they better not be putting in unreasonable procedures, and I don't know that we have to tell them that.
Senator Schott.
Madam Chair, I don't know if Senator Limmer had, did you make a motion? I guess I'd offer then on page 21, line 33. So 21.33, starting with the system shall provide. I think you might say, then strike on line 34, reasonable procedures, just strike reasonable procedures. And it will read, and then insert a process. So the system, it will read then, a system shall provide a process that shall ensure, or that ensures, I'm not sure how to best say that, adequate consideration, because it seems to me the key words there are adequate consideration and appropriate remedies. So
is that a motion, Senator Scheid?
It is.
Can you repeat it?
Yes. On line 34, strike reasonable procedures. Insert a process.
And do you also want to strike the word shall?
Yeah. I think I would, and make ensure ensures.
All right. Ms. Pontius, did you get that?
Yes.
Okay. Discussion on that motion. Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, that begs the question then of what kind of process is it, and is it out of the purview of the legislature? Is it strictly in the hands of the ombudsman? And how do we know what's really being created? Just a trust me?
It needs to be reasonable.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, let's be reasonable.
Members,
today.
You may direct comments one another, but it's all on the record. So you might as well say it loud enough so the rest of our members, people in the room can also hear it, too.
I apologize, Madam Chair. I was being facetious. I know that's hard to believe.
All right. On Senator Scheid's motion, Senator Marty, do you have any thoughts?
It sounds good.
All right. On Senator Scheid's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Betzel.
Senator Marty, page 18, line 32. If you read this sentence, it starts with the word by. Do we see a problem?
Let's see. What number?
Page 18, line 32.
Madam Chair, Senator Betzel, maybe she could act really fast.
Yeah, that would help. By October 1, 2009, the commissioner shall designate. I'm sure I move that we change 2009 to 2010.
Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, that sounds much more appropriate, and I'm thinking there might be one or two other ones in the effective date section that we would have to change as well. But
Senator Marty, Senator Betzel, can you add in your amendment that council will go through the document on Senator Marty's behalf and just identify where there are inconsistent dates that we will make them consistent now?
Madam Chair, I'll make a dual motion to on page 18. Oh, first motion, page 18, line 32, change 2009 to 2010. That'll be my first motion.
All right. On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, I'll then move to direct council to find any other obvious errors in the bill and correct them. So.
All right. On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair.
Senator Lemmer.
Madam Chair, if I could direct your attention to page 4 and 5 of the bill. This is regarding eligibility, and it raises questions of residential standards. My question on line 21, where it says the board shall establish standards to prevent people from moving to the state for the purpose of obtaining medical care. I'm wondering if that would raise a constitutional issue, namely Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution. And I'm not sure how a state agency like this could prevent anyone from moving to this state.
So, Senator Marty, I know that this is not one of the articles that brought this to the committee because we didn't contemplate it, but since Senator Limmer was concerned that this could be a constitutionality question, could you address that, please?
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, 2 points. One is, yes, I think anything in this area is going to be on the edge of constitutionality, and the one first comment is, and if they set up something that was unconstitutional, it obviously wouldn't work. The thought in terms of trying to prevent people for that is that you might have a several-month delay in implementation or something like that. The other thing that I believe we have in terms of asking for federal government authority, we would be, I believe the bill explicitly says, we would be asking a federal government for a number of waivers, including the ability to charge back other states. If we are providing health care for 5.1 million Minnesotans, we're taking care of our people, and if people are coming here from Iowa or somewhere
Indiana.
Else to get health care, that we could charge back their states for it. But I think that the point is you should accept this as a fairly limited thing. The state cannot put barriers up around the state for constitutional reasons. I recognize that, and this is not any – I mean, I've seen some bills where we actually say – nothing in here is supposed to violate the Constitution. I don't think we have to say that. I think that's understood.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Lemmer.
And it also makes reference on page 5, line 1, non-residents visiting Minnesota shall be billed for all services received under the Minnesota Health Plan. And I think there's case law a number of years back when people who came from other states to take advantage of our welfare benefits, they were challenged, And the courts, at least in Minnesota, the Minnesota Supreme Court, basically said, no, you can't treat these people any differently than a Minnesota citizen. And I think that's still the standing of case law. It hasn't been altered since that time. So I think this language that you have on 421 and 5.1, I think is nothing more than comfort language, and I don't think has any real meat to it. And I, because of the case law that's already existing.
Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, the first one I think we've discussed some, and that is that there's only limited things that they can do that way. But the other one about billing people, if you get health care in certain other countries, they will bill you. And it's if I get health care in a hospital in Florida, they will try and bill my health plan or bill me. I don't think there's anything unconstitutional in trying to bill somebody for services you provide.
Ms. Pontius, with respect to the language on line 4.21 and 4.22, what is the case law, and I know we didn't ask you to prep on this, on in terms of the freedom to travel and people's ability to move from state to state?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I haven't looked at that issue in about 15 or 20 years. So, but I know it does come up under the right to travel and some of the welfare eligibility cases. So you can't just, you couldn't have just a blanket sort of thing that people can't move to the state for purposes of obtaining medical care. I think, I can't remember if the case has developed any kind of parameter as far as residency requirements, how long you had to be a resident before you could be eligible, and at what point it infringes on the right to travel.
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion to delete on page 421 and 22, after the period on 21, the entire sentence along with line 22.
Any further discussions? Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, was that the sentence beginning on line 4.21?
Yes.
Yes.
Madam Chair, my response, Senator Limmer, would be that I think if you're expecting that this language means they will totally prevent anybody from doing, I mean, people are moving all the time between states and so on, and I don't think that's the intent of it or so on, but it seems to me appropriate to try and, the board shall try and do it so we don't, if there are ways to do it, say there's a waiting period or something, that they should be exploring every way they can do that. I guess I think it serves some purpose, and that if it served the purpose you think it was, that it looks like it's serving, it would be unconstitutional. I don't disagree with that. And I think there are some ways that it could restrict and discourage people from, they could have that impact in a constitutional manner, but I...
You know, Senator Marty, I agree with Senator Limmer to the extent that that kind of language sends up all kinds of red flags. I mean, looking at the sentence as a standalone, what are we going to do? Post, notices at the gateways to the state of Minnesota to say if you're coming here for health insurance, you better turn around and go back home. I mean, I know that that's not your intent, right. But I think that it does send that kind of red flag. And if we're interested in eligibility verification, I think that will be duly developed and is contemplated within the infrastructure that you've already provided. So I know that you are concerned about eligibility, not about preventing people, whether they're only in Minnesota for 5 days, if they're genuinely here. Your objective here is to provide healthcare access to people without denial on a number of different areas have made that difficult, and I think that this runs contrary to that intent.
Madam Chair, the issue of that I've mentioned about trying to bill other states for it is not affected by this provision and so on, and I guess the thought was there was a way that if somebody is moving here for a period of time, they wouldn't be covered or something. But I hear your concerns that Senator Limmer started raising about how much of this, I mean, it sounds like this does a lot more than it could possibly do within constitutional grounds. So, I mean, I think the board could accomplish what it needs without the language anyway.
Any further discussions at Senator Limmer's amendment?
Sure,
Senator Limmer.
Point, The board may be capable of doing that, but I think if we're going to start making standards or eligibility requirements, I think that might be better left for the legislature to do rather than a board.
Any further discussions on Senator Limmer's amendment?
Can you reread that?
Senator Limmer has moved to delete, starting on line 4.21 after the period, starting with the word "the," delete all of that language to the end of the line, including line 4.22 to the period. All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair.
You know, when Senator Betzel and Senator Higgins both raise their hands, I get nervous. Senator Betzel.
Madam Chair, on page 18, line 15, annual report to the legislature. We typically avoid that broad kind of directive because that would mean 201 reports sent to a lot of people who don't want or see them. I think the language we'll use, and I may have to ask counsel to help me with this one, but we might typically say the chairs and ranking minority members of the legislative committees having jurisdiction over health care issues. Let me repeat that. The chairs and ranking minority members of the legislative committees having jurisdiction over health care issues.
And that's pretty standard. Yep. We've done that elsewhere, and I'm sure that it's just mere oversight in this section. So any discussions? On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails. Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, I'll draw your attention to page 21. Starting on line 10, the sentence starting on line 10 says that the budget for the Ombudsman's office shall be determined by the legislature and is independent from the health board. But then there's this odd thing that says, which has no oversight or authority over the Ombudsman for patient advocacy. And I think it's probably important to say that the board doesn't have that oversight or authority over the Ombudsman. But I don't think that's the right place to put it, is stuck on the end of this sentence.
Yeah,
right. Run-on sentence, yeah.
So I think maybe the easiest way to do it is to end the – on line 11, end the sentence after board.
Period.
So put a period there. Delete the rest of that larger sentence, and then put a new E paragraph that says the Minnesota Health Board shall have no oversight or authority over the Ombudsman for patient advocacy. So pick up that last half of that sentence and make it a new E. Did that make any sense?
Makes sense.
I hope.
Ms. Pontius? Mm-hmm. Okay. Ms. Pontius says that makes sense.
Yahoo.
Senator Marty?
Move that.
Makes sense to me, too.
On that motion, any further discussions on that motion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails.
And then, Madam Chair, I had one more question.
Senator Higgins.
Same page, line 29. There's a reference to non-confidential and non-privileged documents.
That's stricken.
Oh, that's gone? I'm
that's
sorry.
That's gone.
Sorry, sorry.
That's on the amendment. Senator Marty?
On point that Senator Betzold made earlier, on line 21.25, we might just say report annually instead of to the public, the board, and the legislature. I think if they just issue a report, I mean.
Report annually. I'll move that, Madam Chair. Delete to the public, comma, the board, comma, and the legislature.
On line, on page 21, line 25, mm-hmm. Senator Higgins moves. Repeat your motion.
Madam Chair, I move that on 21.25, delete the words to the public, comma, the board, comma, and the legislature.
Report annually.
Who do they report to?
Put it on the website.
Ms. Pontius?
Madam Chair, members, you could just delete report annually to the public, the board, and the legislature, and insert prepare an annual report about.
Senator Higgins withdraws her motion. Senator Higgins, would you consider Ms.
Sure.
Pontius's recommendation here?
Madam Chair, I move what Ms. Pontius says.
Right.
That's my favorite motion.
All right. On that motion, any further discussions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails.
Senator Spear said sometimes that's the best thing you can do. I like Mr. President.
The Senate.
Madam Chair.
Judiciary and Editing Committee. I think it's almost done with this bill. Senator Foley?
I was just curious on page 22 and line 30.
Does that go into your fix everything else that's goofy?
Where it says investigate patterns of medical practice that may indicate fraud and abuse and services or something. What is the pattern, for instance, in that sense? It seems to me that it needs personification or something.
Mr. Peterson or Senator Marty?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Foley, that was intended to, I'm not an expert in medical auditing or anything, but there are certain types of, I think we often see it in government with Medicaid and Medicare type of frauds where a certain, where a doctor may be doing certain type of practice, billing practice or something that might indicate fraud and therefore they investigate that way. But I think the main thing is we want them to investigate potential fraud and abuse. I think this is, we don't have to tell them how to do it and what to look for because I think that's what the auditors are good at. But so I don't know if you want to change the language. I think that's explaining how we think they often catch it. They see patterns related to billing or something that might indicate it.
Madam Chair.
But you could just say, just they may investigate potential fraud and abuse.
Senator Foley?
Madam Chair, I kind of think it helped that by getting rid of patterns and investigate medical practices that may indicate fraud or beyond that. Maybe not even the last part of it. Just investigate medical practices for the purposes of
Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, if you just investigate medical practices may indicate fraud and abuse, I suppose that would cover all of those things. The potential caution, I'd say, is that inappropriate utilization of medical products and services, if somebody is, I think it would all be covered. I think that would all be covered if we just said indicate fraud and abuse.
And Chair?
Senator Olson.
That's fine.
Madam Chair, I agree with Senator Foley because, I think the intent here is to get at something that we know about today that's commonly happening, but in the future, who knows where this direction could go. And by leaving it more open-ended, it's probably giving them more authority.
So let's see. On line 22.30, Senator Foley, do you want to delete pattern of medical practices that may indicate?
That's my.
Senator Foley moves the deletion of the words on line 22.30, patterns of medical practice that may indicate. Any further discussions? Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, the way I understood the amendment, that would also indicate the rest of line 30, or delete the rest of line 31 and 32, and would just simply say investigate fraud and abuse.
Senator Foley, will you accept that as a friendly amendment?
I would, Madam Chair.
All right, on Senator Foley's motion, any further discussions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails. Any further discussions on Senate File 118 and particularly the provisions that are before us as we have now adopted the A2 amendment? Seeing none, Senator Olson moves that Senate File 118 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the State and Local Government Operations Oversight Committee. Any further discussions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Marty.
Thank you for your good editing work. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Go forth and tell the other members of the Senate that if they don't want to sit through an editorial session that they ought to edit their
Madam
documents.
Chair, we've been editing this for about 2 years, and there will still be more editing people will find out. The only one I'm really embarrassed about was the no cost.
No cost.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Marty. Senator Pappas, wonder if we've gone on. So Senator Pappas is not here. Can we give her office a call? Oh, she's on her way down. She's on her way down. Senator Pappas, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for expediting these bills that the committee passed last year, and I believe we passed them off the Senate floor, but they didn't complete their work in the other body. Just to remind the committee, Senate File 531. Madam Chair, I'll proceed.
We'll go with Senate File 531, members.
Okay. Just a little background. One of our House colleagues had an opponent who she found out did not live in the district and so was not legally allowed to run in that district, but no one knew that because he didn't have to put his address on his affidavit. So this, and she had to go to court to get him off the ballot. So this requires that you have to put your address on the affidavit. However, if there is a reason why, for some reason, somebody's stalking you or whatever, that you want that to be private data, you can put it on a separate sheet, and it's just reviewed by the filing officer to make sure you meet the residency requirements. So that's
Senator,
and Madam Chair, there is an amendment that I think Ms. Pontius identified that we needed to put on the bill. Is that still relevant?
Mm-hmm. Senator Pappas, this bill was in the committee. We actually didn't give it a hearing. The bill was withdrawn from the committee. It ended up on the Senate floor. And then when the legislative session ended, the bill then got sent back to us. And I thought that the reason for that was because the data provision was going to just get taken out of the bill on the floor, thus eliminating the reason why it was in the Judiciary Committee, because we had hit deadline or missed deadline. We're up against deadline. So this bill actually was never heard by this committee. But that's all right.
My memory is poor.
Yep. So, but it got kicked back to us, and I think that's what the A6 amendment does.
Is to fix
the data privacy provision that brought it to us in the first place.
Okay.
And so this is the first time the committee will be hearing this bill. It didn't come to us from any other committees, it's going from us straight to the floor, I think. Senator Betzel.
Last year, Madam Chair, it was.
Oh, it came from state and local to us.
State and local.
Madam Chair, it's got the history at the top of the bill. It was referred to state and local government, then referred to judiciary on April 2nd, which is around deadline time, but then withdrawn. And given a second reading, right.
So, Senator Pappas, why don't you explain the A6, or I could have Ms. Pontius explain the A6 amendment. Ms. Pontius, the A6 amendment?
Yeah, Madam Chair and members, this basically is just a technical reworking of the language. The first part of the amendment, though, just adds a section which is the standard Chapter 13 cross-reference when you have a data classification outside of Chapter 13. And then the second part just combines the language dealing with the privacy of the resident's address. It was kind of in two different places in the bill. So it just makes a stylistic change in how it's drafted. It's not substantive.
Any questions for Senator, Senator Betzel?
I'm just trying to figure out, does this address the problem that was described to us? Because if the candidate lists an address, but it's private data, that is, it's only between the candidate and the filing officer, would another member of the public know whether or not the candidate lives within the district that the candidate is running for? I'm trying to make sure that this language would work under the problem that Senator Pappas identified.
Madam Chair?
Senator Pappas?
I think the idea is that the filing officer does have access to the private data, not the public, and then can determine that whether the person actually meets the residency requirement. So the onus is on the filing officer, the filing officer, the Ramsey County clerk or whatever it is, as opposed to the opposing candidate. To make that determination.
Okay. But
Senator Betzel,
if you're running for public office, presumably you have to reside, and you have to be elected out of a district, and you have to reside in that district. Why wouldn't your address then be public information? I think there's stalking issues and so forth, but if you're going to hold yourself off as a candidate, I think you have to establish to the rest of the public, not just to a filing officer, that, you know, I do live in the area that I'm purporting to reside in, not just a post office box or whatever. So,
Senator Pappas?
Senator Betzel, this was a discussion in state government, and I believe it was Senator Sieben that we worked out the language where it would be private data was brought to this committee. Otherwise, it would have been my original bill was said you had to put your address on your affidavit of candidacy. But she brought up concerns, and we did exclude judicial offices, county attorneys, or county sheriffs. I guess there's some sensitivity of safety issues. And I think she had a personal experience where, like I said, she was being stalked by someone. And I think she still has just a post office number in the Green Book. Because of concerns about her address being public.
Senator Higgins?
Madam Chair, I had a bill similar to this several years ago as a result of some folks, you know, who I know didn't live where they said they did. And mm-hmm. and the issue that we ran into were the judges who had traditionally always put the incumbent judges always put, you know, if they were in Hennepin County, it's, you know, suite number in the Hennepin County Government Center, and they brought up the safety issues that they don't because of people who go find them and show up at their front doors and things. It really was a matter of safety for the judges,
Madam Chair. But we do
Senator
want
Pappas.
To make sure that the candidate does live in the district, so we want some way to be able to determine that. And this was the proposal that was brought forward by the previous committee.
Senator Scheid?
Madam Chair, a couple of things come to mind, and I could be wrong, but I think back in the 80s, we enabled people to vote who didn't have a permanent address. For a homeless person, for example, can vote by stating, I think, that they live, literally under a bridge someplace or, you know, some kind of geographical area. And that just really, it's obviously they couldn't run for office, it seems, by virtue of this, to state a residence, unless they could also say that. You know, it seems crazy, but it's true. I think that they have the right to vote, so they ought to have the right to run. But also, it almost doesn't make sense if the public can't know it. So maybe, and I don't have language here because I hadn't looked at this bill before, but maybe you just need someone, a county official, to verify that an address is within the appropriate legislative district,
kind of,
for example.
Does, yeah. See. Line 22.
And
right. Madam Chair, Senator Shad, that's what we do.
I'm sorry. Yeah. So that's
Yeah.
Senator Pappas, can you can you maybe walk through the process of how an individual would do this?
If the individual has to list their address on the affidavit, if they say that that is, for whatever reason, that's a problem for them and they want it to be private data, then they have to list it on a separate document attached to the affidavit. It's designated as private data, but the file, it's accessible to the filing officer. Now, who's the filing officer?
County auditor.
I'm not sure how that works.
County auditor.
The what?
The auditor.
Senator Higgins?
Sorry, Madam Chair, it's the county auditor.
The county auditor. So it's available to the county auditor, and the county auditor has to determine that they actually live in the appropriate district.
So, Senator Pappas, in the event that, so there's somebody like that, and then a member of the public wants to challenge that, how would they go about challenging the or verifying that this individual does or does not live in the district, other than to have the election auditor say, trust me?
Madam Chair, I think that's it, what you just said, is that the county auditor would, you'd have to have a conversation with the county auditor, and the county auditor would say, I check the address, I know the district lines, and I will tell you, you know, to that, that that person does live in the district.
Because he hasn't sold his house.
They have to drive over.
Members?
Madam Chair.
Senator Lemmer?
The question I may have is, Senator Pappas, in your bill, does it make reference to, let's say, an extenuating circumstance that the individual is actually being stalked? It seems, in reading it, it just the candidate can just say he doesn't want his he or she doesn't want their address divulged, and there's no extenuating circumstance. Doesn't have to be an actual event of stalking. There's nothing that's been clarified by the courts in order to do so. And I'm just,
Madam
or even,
Chair,
not even a police report.
Madam Chair and members.
Senator Pappas.
Current law does not require you to list your address. Right. Current law.
P.O. Box. Right.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, I don't think we'd want to put it into law that we had to wait for something bad to happen before someone would have a right to have, you know, some take some reasonable steps with regard to their safety. It seems to me that anyone running for office will have to deal with that politically. You know, if they took advantage of that and they should have an address public and they don't, well, then they'd have to answer to the public over that. But at least it gives them the option to make their own decision about what they want to do regarding making this public or dealing or having concerns about their safety.
Senator Ortman.
Madam Chair, my question is about how would that, say the opponent wants to challenge, right? Challenge through the office, they get a, yep, that person lives there. Well, how do you challenge that? I mean, and how do you go out and say, well, we have a residency requirement, but not really? I mean, I think we have to go back to what the whole point of the residency requirement was in the first place, which is to make sure that people that run actually represent their community. And that gets pretty hard to do if people don't have to say in our affidavits that they actually live within the community. And if I were just trying to do opponent research, I would find a dead end in the county office or the Secretary of State's office. And that shouldn't be good enough if we have a residency requirement. Otherwise, maybe we should just get rid of the residency requirement. I don't support that, but I think we're into the weeds here, like really deep into the weeds.
Madam Senator Pappas.
We'll all be going through this summer, but because I don't recall from 4 years ago, and maybe I should have looked this up, that when you file to be a candidate, do you have to say that you live in the district where you're filing?
Yeah. Depends on.
So maybe you already have to.
Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, it depends on whether you're running for the legislature or whether you're running for some of the local offices. For the legislature, you have to live there so many weeks
days.
Before
180 days.
6 months before the election.
So the question is, though, do you sign an affidavit saying that you fulfilled that requirement when you file?
They really don't make you do that. I don't think so, ma'am.
Senator Higgins?
I think that's a leap of faith that we probably shouldn't do. Local offices, I think our city councils, they tend to have ordinances that tend to say that you have to live there when you file. We had somebody from Duluth file for one of the Minneapolis City Council offices last year, which I thought was sort of interesting.
And he rode a bicycle to all the meetings.
Good.
From Duluth.
Senator Pappas.
I am trying to fix one problem, and the committee may have identified another problem. So it depends on whether you think this is adequate. You know, I tend to agree with Senator Betzold. I would like to have the addresses be public data. The committee, the state and local government committee, responded to Senator Sieben's concerns and, you know, changed the bill to make that private data with the filing officer making the determination that the person does live in the district. So it did seem to me that that was a good compromise, that as long as we had someone looking over the shoulder to make sure that that person actually lived there, then it would fulfill the requirement of the legislation. If members want to offer an amendment on the floor, introduce another bill.
Senator Pappas, the core of what you're trying to do here is what again?
Make sure that a candidate filing for the legislature actually lives in the district where they're filing.
Is this only the legislature that we're talking about?
I think.
Oh, maybe it's not just the legislature. It's
right. So.
You're right, just as a candidate. So, anyway.
Not just the legislature.
Members, I want to be helpful with Senator Pappas's intent, which is to let people know it's the very issue that Senator Ortman identified, which that we agree with you, Senator Pappas, that we would like to be able to verify or to require that the person running for that area live there. Mm-hmm. But I think that this classification does away with that, or the ability to verify. And I don't know that members of this committee are comfortable by just going off of the auditor, the county auditor says, trust me, I know this person lives there.
Well, Madam Chair, if we do, then we need to figure this out. Because if we do nothing, candidates don't have to reveal their address. So then the committee might want to go back to the original bill, which was before it got amended in the last committee, and kind of undo their work. And I don't even have that language with me.
Madam Chair.
Senator Altman.
Just as an aside, I don't want anybody to be stalked, but I have been stalked here at the Capitol, and we're not going to hide the address here. You know, this is the Capitol, and it's part of being a public servant. There are some great advantages, and there are some terrible disadvantages. But I think that if somebody feels like they are at risk, they can go to a court and get a temporary restraining order. That's the answer, mm-hmm. I think. It's a more straightforward answer. There's a risk, you get a temporary restraining order. Rather than, I mean, maybe they feel that there are concerns for their safety when they file for office, but that is, again, one of those disadvantages. If they think that person is a risk, go to court and get a temporary restraining order. Don't keep that very important information private. I would support the other bill.
Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, it's been a little while ago now, but it wasn't that long ago when we had someone called the Unabomber that was sending things through the mail to judges' homes. And it seems to me that I'm particularly concerned about judges here because we have security in place for law enforcement and for our courts where they're in situations where we expect them to be at an increased risk of danger in their offices. Thank goodness we haven't had those kinds of issues here in the legislature, but we have had a lot of them in our judiciary, in our judicial system, and with public safety. And since those people are also candidates here, it seems to me that they should have the ability to keep their addresses private and confidential and not put themselves at that kind of risk.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas.
And Senator Olson, we did exclude.
They are exempt.
Judges, county attorneys.
Judges. And maybe you could go back to, I guess the original bill is here, and it was just line 1.9 through 1.11. You have to state your residence and a telephone number where you can be contacted.
That was the original bill.
The rest of the stuff is trying to figure out how to handle the private data.
So, Senator Pappas, the original bill is, repeat for us what the original bill is again.
Well, I don't know if you need, except, we probably don't need, except it's provided in paragraph D. I mean, Ms. Pontius is going to have to help us with this, but it does seem like the language is 110 and 111. An affidavit of candidacy must state the candidate's residence address and a telephone number where the candidate can be contacted.
Madam Chair.
That was probably
Senator Higgins.
Do we have another bill we're going to be working on yet this afternoon?
We have another Senator Pappas bill, and we have a Senator Olson bill.
Could we lay this aside and have somebody go do a little work on it and then bring it back?
Senator Pappas will be here presenting the bill.
I can't make it private.
But maybe one of Senate counsel or somebody can help get the information that we need about the old bill and try and come up with a plan of action while Senator Pappas presents her other bill and Senator Olson presents her bill.
Ms. Pontius, Senator Pappas, we'll just lay this aside and let Ms. Pontius take a look at this. I mean, what we in essence want to do is we want to have the information be available to the public, which is your original intent.
Okay.
I can do that orally right now.
Ms. Pontius says she can do that orally now.
Ooh.
So, Ms. Pontius?
Madam Chair and members, it's mainly just deleting language. So if the intent is just to take out the option of making it private, but leave the other provisions in. On page 1, lines 9 and 10, delete except as provided in paragraph D, comma. And then on lines 11 and 12, just delete that sentence starting in the middle of line 11. And then paragraph B can stay in, and paragraph C can stay in. And then on page 2, delete paragraph D, so delete lines 4 to 8.
Remove paragraph D?
Paragraph D, yes. Page 2, lines 4 to 8.
Madam Chair, and then we keep paragraph E, which Senator Olson, I think, said concerns. So it doesn't apply to candidates for judicial office or the office of county attorney or county sheriff.
Members? Senator Ortman?
Good. I'll move the bill that way. Amend it. I'll move the amendment.
Senator Ortman moves the amendment as stated by counsel. Senator Pappas is in agreement. Any further discussions on that motion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails. Members, I think that's the bill, and from here it goes to the floor. Any further discussion? Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, do we say anywhere what the process is if somebody, if a candidate moves between filings and the election, that information must be updated? I don't know if that exists anywhere in statute now, but it may not be a bad thing to think about a sentence going somewhere. This might not be the right bill, but maybe it is.
Senator Betzel has a comment, so we'll let Ms. Pontius ponder that. Senator Betzel?
I just wanted to comment that Senator Limmer, Senator Scheid, and I are aware of a situation of a northern suburban mayor of Brooklyn Park, who went on to become the governor of the state, by the way. And it wasn't quite clear when he was the mayor if he actually lived in Brooklyn Park or whether he lived in Senator Limmer's district. And so these things, you know, have broader implications as well, too. He was also the one that didn't want anybody at the city to know what his home address was, even though he was the mayor of the city. So
didn't want to be found, apparently.
Didn't want to be found, and did a good job at it. So,
but he was sleeping in Maple Grove.
Yes.
Ms. Pontius?
And traveling around the state, too.
Eating lunch in Brooklyn.
Senator Higgins, why don't we, can you have a conversation maybe with Senator Rest, because that's an election law issue. And we'll see if If this bill is going to go to the Senate floor, talk to Senator Rest, and maybe Senator Pappas can talk to Senator Rest, and that may be a floor amendment that you can put on the bill.
Okay.
If they're open to that. Any other discussions in Senate File 531? Is anybody here who would like to testify either for or against this bill? See none. Senator.
Somebody.
Senator Higgins moves that Senate File 531 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the Senate floor. Any further discussions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails. Now, Senator Pappas, Senate File 838 is the one that came through our committee. We voted on it. It did get sent to the floor. But it just wasn't taken up on the floor. And so by operation, Rule 47 just got kicked back to us. Senator Pappas doesn't have anything new to add. It came back to us exactly in the shape that it left us. So unless members have any discussions, I think as a matter of formality, we should just send it back right back. So Senator Shai moves that Senate File 838 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Senate floor. Any further discussions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have the same situation with Senate File 271, the whistleblower bill. This is
That's
a
right.
bill that we passed to the floor that came back under the same rule and needs a re-referral.
So unless any other members have any concerns, again, I think it came back to us in exactly the form that we sent it out. Any discussions on Senate File 271? Senator Betzel.
This is actually passed to the Senate because it was an omnibus bill that was vetoed. So, I mean, the full Senate's actually acted on it. Just didn't act on this particular component again last year. So.
Right. Any further discussions? Senator Olson moves that Senate File 271 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Senate floor. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
Did you learn anything?
Motion prevails. Members, this concludes our work for the day. Thank you very much, and we stand adjourned.
Good point.
Is this yours?